That's another one of them songs that's got different words in different books. They're not major different, but they're different. And it hurts me to read the words if I've got different words in my head, you know. But nonetheless, the song's got a great message that's a benefit to us. We're certainly thankful that God saw fit to put His love upon us and save us and call us. And how awesome to even think about. Job chapter 3. We started the book last week, and I tell you we're going to move quick. Now today you're going to think I lied to you because we're just going to cover one chapter. But there's a reason that we're just going to cover one chapter today. I just think that the next several chapters, 4, 5, and 6, go together because they're a conversation. And I think 3 then needs to be taken on its own merits and in its entirety. The benefit of that is we have a business meeting today, so it's going to work out just great. And I won't linger too terribly long. In the first lesson, we learned about our main character, Job, and the situation that leads to the rest of the book. The entire book is based on chapter 1 and 2, basically, and the outflowing of that situation. Satan challenged God that Job would curse him if he, Satan, was allowed to take Job's possessions, family, and finally his health. And at the end of chapter 2, we found Job having lost all that he had, including his health, as he had boils from head to toe. And I got to thinking this week about how in the world Job could ever get comfortable at all, sitting, standing, or laying down. And the answer is, he couldn't. There was no comfort. 3 supposed friends had shown up to comfort him. I think today is Job's crying out to those friends for help. He's crying out to these friends to help him understand everything that's going on in his life. Chapters 4, 5, and 6, Job begins to understand that there is no help from these 3 friends. As mentioned last week, I plan to take the book in sections. We've already told you about that. Today will be chapter 3. Next week, good Lord willing, we will cover chapters 4 through 6. We will move quickly, and we may not even read every verse, but that will give you a little bit of homework. Make sure you read chapters 4 through 6 so that you do understand what's going on. I think it's a benefit for you to read that. Verses 1 through 10. After this, after everything that happens in chapters 1 and 2 and the sitting around for 7 days, looking at one another, not knowing what to say to Job, mourning with Job. After this, Job opened his mouth and cursed the day of his birth. Job spoke and said, "May the day perish on which I was born, and the night in which it was said a male child is conceived. May that day be darkness. May God not seek it, nor light shine upon it. May darkness and the shadow of death claim it. May a cloud settle on it. May the blackness of the day terrify it. As for that night, may darkness seize it. May it not rejoice among the days of the year. May it not come into the number of the months. Oh, may that night be barren. May no joyful shout come into it. May those who curse it, who curse the day. May those curse it, who curse the day. Excuse me. Those who are ready to arouse Leviathan. May the stars of its morning be dark. May its stars of the morning be dark. May it look for light, but have none, and not see the dawning of the day, because it did not shut up the door of my mother's womb, nor hide sorrow from my eyes." These are really strong words by Job. I don't know that many people have ever reached such a depth of despair to just wish they'd never even been born. I've heard people say things like that, but I don't think they meant it the way Job meant them. Job meant these words in a way that we can't even begin to imagine. And Job is crying out, I mean, with everything in him, that he wishes the day had never been. It would do us well to remember right now that Job has had more put on him than any of us can imagine. I've never seen anybody that has lost everything so quickly and so completely, and yet had breath in their body. That's all Job had. Job curses the day of his birth. He does not curse God. That was Satan's challenge. Job does not curse God, but he does curse the day of his birth. He wishes he'd never been born. Job had had some good things happen to him in his life, but nothing that Job had experienced seemed worth the pain that he was presently in, both body and soul. If you think about it, had Job never been born, neither would any of his children ever been born. Neither would his servants have ever had anybody to employ them as far as Job knew. All the people that had benefited from Job, and many had, no doubt, this was the greatest man of the East. Many had benefited from Job's life. But Job said, no, I wish I'd never been born. Job's desire is that his mother would never even have conceived him. Verse 3, may the day perish on which I was born, and the night on which it was said a male child is conceived. In the most poetic way that we could think about, Job's desire is that the day of his conception and birth would vanish from human history. That it would be wiped off the calendar, and it would be wiped off everything that has ever been. Look what he has to say here. May that day be darkness. In other words, may that day not ever have been. May God above not seek it, nor the light shine upon it. May darkness and the shadow of death claim it. May a cloud settle on it. May the blackness of the day terrify it. As for the night, may darkness seize it. May it not rejoice among the days of the year. Let that particular day just be erased from human history. May it not come into the number of the months. Job desires those who issue bold curses to curse that day. Look at what verse 8 says. May those curse it who curse the day, those who are ready to arouse Leviathan. Let me tell you a little bit about Leviathan. We're not going to get into it very much today. But if you've ever seen the movie Godzilla, that's about what Leviathan is set out to be in chapter 41. Good Lord willing, when we get there, we'll go over that. But Leviathan was a water-based dinosaur-like animal that lived in Job's time. And not many people wanted to go out there and call Leviathan up out of the water. But there were a few old brave souls, for whatever foolish reasons they were, that would do that. And Job says, I want those bold people cursing the day of my birth. He wanted the strongest of the strong cursing the day that he was born. Verse 11. Why did I not die at birth? Why did I not perish when I came forth from the womb? Why did the knees receive me, or why the breast that I should nurse? For now I would have lain asleep and been quiet. I would have been asleep, then I would have been at rest. With kings and counselors of the earth who built ruins for themselves, or with princes who had gold or who filled their houses with silver, oh, why was I not hidden like a stillborn child, like infants who never saw light? There the wicked cease from troubling, and there the weary are at rest. There the prisoners rest together. They do not hear the voice of the oppressor. The small and the great are there, and the servant is free from his master. Job has said he wishes he'd never been born. He wishes that he'd never been conceived. And now he's saying, I wish I would have died at birth. Had those two things not happened, had I still been conceived and had I been born, well, how about if I just died at birth? That had to be better than what Job was going through. How are these friends just... their heart not going out to Job? No doubt they've never seen anybody in such a position as this. And their heart is just going out to him, or should be, but it's apparently not from the response that we see. Job wishes he would have died at birth. all of the loss and the pain that he was currently going through overshadowed all the good that he had previously enjoyed. You know, in the midst of pain, thoughts are not clear. Sometimes when you're in the middle of going through something, you're just not thinking as clearly as you need to. It's like coming out from an appendectomy and still being under medication. Your thoughts aren't exactly clear. I have a few stories relative to that, but I won't share them here because he's already perked up. But sometimes your thoughts aren't clear, and that's Job's thoughts weren't clear. Job had been blessed in a major way by the Lord, but at this moment in time, he was going through something that we can't even fathom. Nor do I find anybody else in the Scripture that ever went through anything worse than Job, save one. And that's Jesus Christ. And even Christ cried out and said, my God, why have you forsaken me? Your heart has got to go out to Job. Job, as a child of God, knew that he would be in paradise already had he died. Verse 13, he says, for now I would have lain asleep and been quiet. I would have been asleep, then I would be at rest. That's where a child of God is when they leave this world. They rest from their labors. Job knows that. Verse 16, Job even wishes that he would have died during pregnancy and had been a stillborn child. Look, most of us would feel the same way if we were in Job's shoes. In fact, I'm not sure that many of us would not have stood the test nearly as well as Job stood this test. I mean, if we get held up on the interstate, man, I wish I'd have gone another way. Wendy, why didn't you tell me to go the other way? That's nothing. That's nothing compared to what Job is going through. We can't fathom it. I mean, we can read it, and that's the best we have, but we can't fathom it. 2 points about death are made in verse 17, I think, are worthy to be pointed out. There the wicked cease from troubling. You know, sometimes there are wicked people, and when they leave this earth, it is a relief to a lot of people. The other joyous side is there the weary are at rest. That's the children of God. Death is a benefit to this world in many ways. One is that the wicked cease from troubling those around them, but the other is that the children of God are present with the Lord. Verse 19, the small and the great are there. They're equals in death. And the servant is free from his master. At least in death, there is no slavery. The mentioning of slavery in this way seems to at least give us a glimpse in God's attitude of one human being owning another human being as property. That will be relieved in the next life. That won't happen. God regulated that in the law, but He regulated many things that were sinful in the law. I don't believe God put His stamp of approval on slavery. Verse 20. Why is light given to him who is in misery and life to the bitter of soul, who long for death, but it does not come, and search for it more than hidden treasures, who rejoice exceedingly and are glad when they can find the grave? Why is light given to a man whose way is hidden, whom God has hedged in? For my sighing comes before I eat, and my groanings pour out like water. For the thing I greatly feared has come upon me, and what I dreaded has happened to me. I am not at ease, nor am I quiet. I have no rest, for trouble comes. Job speaks now as he originally talked about. He wished he'd never been conceived. He wished he'd never been born. He wished he would have died at birth. Now Job's desire is that he would die at this present time. Lord, just take me out. I can't take any more. But it doesn't come. In this way, Job is like the lost during the tribulation period in Revelation 9 and 6, that says they will seek death and will not find it. Job was seeking death. He was praying to God to take his life. But that wasn't happening because, if you'll recall, God had restricted Satan from taking Job's life. Death to Job seems the only escape from his current sufferings. Look, we've all seen loved ones suffer and prayed that the Lord would take them off. Job is wishing that for himself. Here. I don't know that his friends are wishing it, because they don't seem to have a lot of sympathy for Job when they begin to open their mouth and talk, but Job is wishing it. Job makes an interesting declaration in verse 25. Tim, I think you're the first one that pointed this out to me this year after we've read it several years in a row. "For the thing I greatly feared has come upon me, and what I dreaded has happened to me." Look, now, recall back in chapter 1, God said Job was a righteous man. "Have you considered my servant Job," he asked Satan, "that he was an upright man that feared God and shunned evil?" Job was a faithful child of God, but he had things he feared. Just because you live a faithful Christian life doesn't mean in this life you're not going to have fears and concerns and things you hope never happen. Look, I hope I never go through what Job's going through. That's normal and natural, the things that Job was fearing. It's not uncommon. The difficult thing, and I think Tim and I talked about this, is to know if Job is referring to the entirety of his sufferings from chapter 1 till now, or if he's just talking about this last infliction of boils. It doesn't seem like he said these things after he'd lost all of his property and his family and everything, but after his health was finally taken from him, then he makes this statement. But though I still say he could have been talking about it all. Either way, he had feared such suffering even during his years of plenty, and his fears had become his reality. We all have fears. As you see an economy crumbling in a country that you've lived in all your life and had plenty by the world's standards, there are fears. That's normal. But God is the one to seek for those fears. Job's final statement in verse 26 is simple. "I am not at ease, nor am I quiet. I have no rest, for trouble comes." He has no ease from suffering. It is constant and terrible. The moment that he wakes up, if he's able to doze off, he's in pain and agony. When he's trying to doze off, he's in pain and agony. Listen to what he said in verse 24. "For my sighing comes before I eat." Look, when I want to eat, I can't. "My groanings pour out like water." He never quiets down. He can't. I mean, I'm certain that Job is all he can do just to muster up these words and get them out. He never rests. How many times have we had a night in which we were unable to rest? And you say, "Man, I just didn't sleep very well last night. I mean, I slept for 8 hours, but I woke up 2 or 3 times. I say every night once you reach 40. You think that time will never come, Jacob West, but it will. Well, I don't know. There is proof the other way. Job never was able to rest. Through all of this, he didn't get rest. He wasn't able to. The moment he thinks he can, his problems remind him that he can't. And at this point, Eliphaz, the Temanite, opens his mouth and says, "You deserve everything that's coming on you, Job. Good Lord willing, we'll deal with that next week." Now, Eliphaz is not going to be speaking from a godly perspective. You know, we can see the words of Eliphaz and say, well, sure, we all deserve everything that any bad that we get. Theologically, that's true. Practically, that's not what Eliphaz is saying. You've got to be able to distinguish between those two things. Eliphaz is not commended at the end of the book. God corrects him. Anyway, we better not get too far into Eliphaz, or well, it could shorten next week. I'm going to ask you to stand, if you will. I'm thankful you were here today. Frank, will you dismiss us, sir?